Welcome to Cluvius Incarnate, an autobiographical novel based on my life from age 3 to age 5, beginning just prior to my third birthday in 1958, and continuing to just before going to elementary school in the fall of 1960. It wasn't my intention to take a 6-month hiatus in my reading of my story, but I ended up doing so. And I'm not sure how often I will be putting out chapters going forward, but I will keep pushing forward, maybe trying to post one once a month. This is Chapter 17, Westwood Court. In this chapter, I'm reintroduced to my grandparents, my Aunt Pat, and their very interesting house on Westwood Court in Binghamton. The grown-ups do lots of talking and try to include me, but I prefer a journey to the donut store and other explorations of the house on my own and with Aunt Pat, and a shared fantasy. It was still dark, but Mom and Dad said it was morning. I wondered if in this Binghamton place it was dark in the morning. Mom had David in her arms, and he looked around trying to figure out this new dark place, too. Mom just kind of stared in one direction, blinking her eyes a lot, which weren't open as much as they usually were. I heard a person calling out, "Sis! Sis! We're over here." I turned and saw the person who was yelling and waving her hand in the air. She looked like I'd seen her before, but it was a long time ago. She had a long blue coat and shiny black boots. Her hair was like Mom's, but shorter. She looked kind of like a grown-up, but she seemed more like a kid, like me, which was what made me remember her. She also reminded me of Margie, who would come and play with me and David when Mom and Dad went to parties. "Oh, Pat, there you are," Mom said with a sigh. "I don't know which way is up at the moment. I barely got any sleep, and changing David's diaper in the middle of the night was a nightmare." Mom waved her hands around and made funny faces and put one of her hands on her forehead. Finally, she tried to make her mouth smile and said, "But we're here." The person approached us and her eyes focused on me, looking at my feet and then up to my head. "Wow, Cooper," she said, smiling, using my new regular nickname. "You've grown so much." I looked at her, remembering her, but not sure why. "Do you remember me?" she said. I nodded. "I'm your Aunt Pat," she said, "your mom's sister. I'm so thrilled to see you again." Dad was finally getting off the train with the big suitcases. "Hey, Pat," he said. "You here with George?" "Well, hello to you too, Eric," Pat said, like she was saying something funny. "Daddy's parking the Buick," she said, "though I could have easily picked you up myself." I still couldn't figure out why she was talking about Daddy to Dad. Dad nodded, but you could tell he was thinking about something. "I'm going to wait for the checked baggage," he said. "I'll catch up with all of you in the terminal." Aunt Pat turned to Mom and looked at David and gave him an even bigger smile. "Oh my God, sis, so this is David." She stuck out her finger and touched his hand. "Hello, you." David smiled back at her. He seemed to like her as much as I did. A tall grown-up with gray hair and a brown coat came up. I kind of remembered him, too, from long ago. He put his gloved hands on Pat's shoulders. "There's our Jane with her new addition," he said, smiling. "Your mother and I are so glad you could make the trip." "Oh, Dad," Mom said, "thank you for paying for the train. Our old Chevy was not up to the task." When she said the words, she sounded more like a kid. "It's a Chevy, I'm not surprised," he said, chuckling. Then his head turned and his eyes looked down at me. "Jonathan, you look so grown up," he said. "You're a big brother now." I nodded and smiled. I wasn't sure about being called grown up, but but I like the big brother part, though I wasn't sure he was just telling me that and didn't really mean it. Grown-ups did things like that sometimes just to get you to do what they wanted. Even Mom and Dad did that sometimes. "Daddy," Aunt Pat said. "He's going by Cooper now." "Say hello to your Grandpa Cooper." Mom's voice felt a little bit like she was telling me what to do. I wasn't sure right away I wanted to do that, but everyone was looking at me. "Hello, Grandpa," I finally said. Mom and Grandpa made big smiles. Aunt Pat grinned like she knew what I was thinking. "You're calling him Cooper now?" Grandpa asked. "Not John or Johnny?" "Yes, Dad." Mom had that same fierce sound in her voice, like she was telling him, "John is my brother's name. My son is Jonathan, and his nickname is Cooper. I'll tell you all about it later." She rubbed the top of my head with her hand. "So, Dad," she said, "say hello to your new grandson, David." "Yes, David," Grandpa said, winking at me and then turning his eyes to my little brother in my mom's arms. "Oh, boy," he said. "Look at this little fella." Then looking up at Mom, "He's got your eyes, Jane." Dad finally came back. He was holding a suitcase in each hand and had boxes under each arm. Mom looked at him and rolled her eyes. "Jesus, Eric, you're going to break your back." Dad looked like a kid for a moment when a grown-up got mad at him. "I'm fine, Liz," he said, though he looked like he was working so much it was hard for him to get the words out. He looked at Grandpa. "Morning, George. Been a while. Thanks for coming out before dawn to pick us up." Dad put down the suitcases and the boxes, rubbed his hand on his pants and stuck it out, and Grandpa stuck out his hand and shook it. That's what grown-up men did to each other when they met. So we all followed Grandpa through the station, he and Aunt Pat carrying the boxes that Dad had, and Dad now only carrying the big suitcases. I carried the train case. I had to use both hands, and it still bumped into my legs. I was getting used to walking with it, and it wasn't so hard because I didn't have to go up or down stairs. When we drove in the car, the sky started getting lighter. I could see the buildings and houses appearing out of the dark. I remembered I had been in this place before, but it was a long time ago. We stopped in front of a house that looked more like Molly's house than ours, because it had a top part above the bottom part, with windows way up there sticking out of the roof with their own little roofs above them, though it only had two of those, and Molly's house had three. Those top part windows were dark, but the bottom ones were all lit up. There was snow on the ground and on the roof, and the front part around the door and windows had different colored gray spots, like a castle house I'd seen on the Captain Kangaroo TV show. We all got out, and Dad opened that trunk part of Grandpa's car and took out suitcases and boxes and put them on the ground. Grandpa picked up one of the suitcases. "George," Dad said kind of fiercely, "I've got that." Grandpa made a weird grunting noise and said, "I'm not an old codger yet." So Dad let him pick up one of the suitcases. I wasn't sure Dad would let me carry the train case, but he did. Mom was holding David. Pat took the two boxes. Dad had the other two suitcases. Grandpa went first, up the two steps to the front door, and opened it with a key. One by one, with what we were carrying, we walked into the house. I heard a voice from inside the house, but I couldn't see where. "Oh, here they all are," it said. "Was the train on time?" "Nope," said Grandpa. "Poor excuse for a railroad." We all walked through the door into the house. Just like the outside was, the inside was kind of like Molly's house. Across from the front door were stairs that went up, but these went straight up and didn't turn in the middle. Something about stairs. I always wanted to run up or down them, but I didn't this time. To the right was one of those living rooms, like in Molly's house, with those big puffy chairs and that long puffy couch thing. The floor had that carpet stuff, like Molly's living room. Then my eyes saw the Christmas tree in the corner of the room nearest to where I was looking in. It had all the shiny things hanging from the branches, and the little lights, blue, red, green, orange, purple, white, and yellow, were all lit up. There were boxes with shiny patterns and bows under the tree. I remembered this Christmas tree thing from a long time ago at our house, and how exciting it all was. I would get to open presents, and some of them would be new toys. I was really excited. But unlike Molly's house, this one had another room to the left of the stairs, with a big brown shiny table in the middle and brown shiny chairs around it. A tall person with gray hair, like Grandpa, only longer, came into that room from somewhere else wearing a white bathrobe. "Here they all are now, our Midwestern branch and its new addition," she said. I figured she was talking about us, and I had heard that Midwestern word before. It was some place close to where we lived. It wasn't that Western place where grown-up men shot each other with guns on TV and Sky King flew his plane through the sky. But I had no idea what the branch and addition things she was talking about. She had big eyes and a round face like Mom, not a thin face like Grandpa. She looked at me and smiled like Mom did. I kind of remembered her, too. "There's our Jonathan, all grown up," she said. I wonder why grown-ups seemed to always do this. Tell us kids we were just like them when we weren't. And they didn't really mean it. It was just something they'd say to get you to do what they wanted. "Mother," Aunt Pat said, "he goes by Cooper now." The woman in the bathrobe wrinkled her nose like she was thinking while she looked at me. "Cooper, eh?" she nodded. "Like that sax player in Stan Kenton's band who married that good-looking young singer. What's her name?" "June Christie," Grandpa said. "Mother," Mom's voice was still sounding fierce, "I wrote you all about this in my letter." She made a smile, but she didn't look at me. She turned and looked down at me, putting her hand on my shoulder. "Cooper," she said, "this is your grandma." She paused and then said, "This is your grandma. You remember when you were here last year?" I nodded. I didn't want them to think I didn't remember. The person in the robe chuckled and said, "Call me what you like. Just don't call me late for dinner." "Good one, Carrie." It was Dad's voice from somewhere behind me. "Hi, Grandma," I said, figuring I should say that. "Back at you, young man," she said, making another smile at me before turning to look at Mom. "So Jane," Grandma said, "introduce me to this other little guy." Mom stepped up to her and turned her body so Grandma could see David's face up close. "Mother, this is David," she said. I could see Mom's cheeks get a little bit red. Grandma put out her finger and touched David's hand, and it closed around her finger. "Hello, little man," she said. "That's quite a grip you have." Then Grandma looked at Mom. "He's got your eyes, Jane." Then she looked at Dad. "You're in there too, Eric." Grandma backed away and then clapped her hands together. "Enough for introductions," she said. "I bet you're all starving. I've got a fresh loaf of pumpernickel and some jam, and I can be talked into whipping up some scrambled eggs. Maybe even some bacon if you ask nice." She waved her hand. "Just leave your bags in the living room for now." "Bacon and eggs would hit the spot, Carrie," Dad said. "There you go," Grandma said, wiggling a finger at Dad. So the rest of us sat on the chairs in the room with the big dining room table in the middle. Aunt Pat gave me a pillow to sit on so I would be up higher. She and Grandma did things in the kitchen, and I heard a sizzling sound and it smelled like cooking. Grandpa asked Dad questions about the stuff he was doing. Dad told him about books and things he was researching, whatever that was. And Pat brought plates with scrambled eggs and bacon on it for everyone. I was hungry and it tasted good. After breakfast, Grandma led us all upstairs to show us the rooms we would be sleeping in. I always liked stairways because they really changed where you were. Mom and Dad had a big room, kind of like Molly's, where the top part wasn't upside down flat, but went up, and the windows were down low and you could see down to the front yard. Next to the bed was a crib with the wood bars for David to sleep in so he couldn't get out, that Grandpa said they borrowed from Johnny, who they said was my uncle, whatever that was. Grandma and Grandpa's bedroom was next to it, but the windows looked down into the backyard instead of the front. After you went up the stairs, you turned left to go to those rooms. If you turned right, you went to Aunt Pat's room. If you didn't turn left or right, you went into the bathroom. Aunt Pat's room was really big because it had a bedroom part and an office part with a desk and a typewriter thing like Dad had. I liked that it was different rooms in the same space, like our basement, which had my part, the TV part, the laundry part, and Dad's office part. There weren't really walls in between, but you pretended there were. The room where my bed was really neat. You had to go into Aunt Pat's room first to get to the door to my room. I'd never seen anything like that in a house before. Once you went through a door into a room, that was it. No more doors to other rooms except for closets, which were kind of rooms but without much space. My room was bigger than a closet, but a lot smaller than all the other rooms I had been in. It had a bed, kind of like my own bed, back home, and a tiny table next to it, and a little thing with drawers, but no closet. And it was smaller than my room back home. It did have a small window right by the bed that you could look out even when you were lying in the bed, which was different from the window in my room back home. Looking out that window, you could see the backyard covered with white snow and had trees with no leaves. I really liked that it was small, but kind of in the middle of things, between the inside rest of the house and the outside part of the backyard. It was that word Mom had used about our room on the train, cozy. Aunt Pat took me on what she called a tour of the rest of the house, which is where you follow someone who tells you about everything you are going to see. We went down the stairs back to the front door, and I saw something really interesting I hadn't seen when we first came in. It was this tall, shiny brown thing by the door that looked like a clock at the top, but below that had this window part that you could look through to see these pine cone-shaped things hanging from chains. Aunt Pat said it was a grandfather clock, so I figured it belonged to my grandpa, who was also my grandfather. She said that to make the thing keep working and telling you the right time, once a day you would open the glass part in the front and pull on the chains so the pine cone things went back up to the top. Then because of what she said was gravity, whatever that was, they would fall down really slowly to pull on the clock to make it work. It was pretty interesting. And she even let me pull one of the chains, which made a clicking sound as I pulled it down and made the pine cone thing, which she said was a weight, go back up. So she did more of the tour, and we made a left turn at the clock into the living room. Our house had a living room too, but this one had chairs and tables and one of those couch things in it like Molly's house. A bedroom had beds in it, and a dining room had a table where you ate food, which grown-ups sometimes called dining. I remembered on the train that the room with the tables where those people were eating was called the dining car, even though it was more like a room than a real car. But what kind of living you did in this kind of room, I wasn't really sure. In our house, it was David's bedroom, and in Molly's, it was where grown-ups sat and talked to each other, and maybe the two kids too, or where they stood around and talked at a party. The first thing I had to look at was the Christmas tree, which was one of those spruce trees like the ones in our backyard, except it was smaller and wasn't coming out of the ground, but came out of a metal bowl thing that I remember you poured water in so the tree didn't get dried out. It had all those small lit-up colored lights on it that, when I looked close, were like regular lights, only smaller, and different colors instead of just white. The tree had other stuff hanging from it, like I remembered, like those shiny round ball things, some looking like they had snow on them or frosting like a donut. And I looked up at the top of the tree, and just as I remembered, there was a star thing up there. There were also these long, shiny silver strands hanging from the branches of the tree. Aunt Pat called them tinsel. "Your mom is very particular about hanging tinsel, one strand at a time," she said. "Me, I cheat a little." She chuckled, and I could tell she liked that she cheated. But as much as I had to look at the tree, I also had to look at the shiny colored boxes under it, with bows and ribbons on them. I knew they were Christmas presents, and I knew some of them were for me. I'm not sure how I knew that, but I just knew. Aunt Pat saw me looking at them and figured out what I was thinking. 3 days till we get to open our presents," she said. I figured she was really a kid like me, only taller, because she said "we" instead of "you," which is what a grown-up would say. I thought about the 3 days part. I knew for a long time what 3 was and what days were, but now I could really figure out what 3 days were. Going to sleep, waking up, going to sleep again, waking up again, going to sleep one more time, then waking up, and that would be 3 days. I really liked looking at the tree and the presents, but I was ready to do more of the tour. Just knowing that they were there and that I could look at them more closely later and open them soon was enough, and I could keep thinking about it while I did other stuff. Aunt Pat walked back towards the back part of the living room. "So here's the back door to the backyard and the stairway down to the basement," she said, "and it also goes through to the kitchen." That last thing was really interesting. You could get to the kitchen from 2 different directions. You could walk around the downstairs rooms in a circle and never stop. I had never seen a house like that before. Not even Molly's house, which had more rooms, stairways, and doors than ours, had this whole circle thing. I could hear Grandma, Grandpa, and Dad, and Mom still in the dining room talking. "So shall we descend into the basement?" Pat said, being kind of silly. I nodded. She headed down the stairs and I followed. I could see the basement had 2 parts, not 4 parts like our basement. But it also didn't have the gray walls and floor like our basement, and looked more like regular rooms like Molly's basement. At the bottom of the stairs, she went to the left. "This is what Mother, your grandmother, calls the rumpus room," she said. "She likes to play the piano and sing." I had no idea what rumpus was, but Dad sometimes called your bottom your rump, so I wondered if that had something to do with it, but I wasn't going to ask. Aunt Pat put her hand on the piano thing. It was brown and shiny and had that black and white front part that you made music on with your fingers and a thing you could sit on to use it. She put her fingers on the black and white parts and pushed them down, and music started coming out. I'd seen people sit at these piano things and make music on TV, but never right there in front of me. I looked at her like I was seeing something strange and interesting. She looked back at me with her eyes really big and just a little bit of a smile and said, "It can also play by itself, and I'll show you that later." "Now here's another really neat part of the house," she said, going into the other part of the basement on the other side of the stairs. I saw one of those big shiny white box things, like we had for washing clothes, except there was a second big shiny white box next to it. "This is the laundry room," she said. "Nothing special about it except for one thing." Then she looked at me and opened her eyes really wide and said, "This secret door." There was a little stairway with just three steps that went up to that door in the wall behind the big white boxes. She climbed up the steps and turned something that made a click noise and then turned the knob and the door opened. I felt cold air come in. I looked up to the room on the other side and it was kind of dark, but I could see the car we had driven home from the train station in. I couldn't figure out how the car got inside the house. She reached through the door and around the corner, and the room with the car was all lit up. "This is a secret passage to the garage," she said really quiet. I liked that. It was really interesting. Our basement didn't have a secret passage like that to a garage place, whatever that was. I didn't want to ask Aunt Pat what a garage was because I didn't want her to think I didn't know. I didn't want her to say, "You don't know what a garage is?" She looked at me with eyes like it was just our secret and said, "I think we should close it because it's freezing out there." I nodded my head. Yes, it was our secret and it did feel cold. So we decided to go back upstairs to where the grown-ups were. Now in the kitchen drinking that coffee stuff that only grown-ups were supposed to drink. Somehow it got them ready to do things that would be too hard if they didn't drink it. It always smelled kind of good, but it didn't taste like it smelled unless you put a lot of sugar and milk in it. Mom did that, but Dad liked it black, which I guess meant just plain. "I made some cocoa too for our young man," she said. "And Pat, what are you up for, cocoa or coffee?" "When did you start drinking coffee?" Mom asked, like she didn't think Aunt Pat would drink it. Aunt Pat made her body look more like a grown-up, and her voice sounded kind of fierce. "Sis," she said, "I've been drinking coffee for years. Helps you stay sharp when you're working 90 hours a week. I've got a job at the Bulletin, and everybody I work with drinks gallons of it." She then looked at me and raised her eyebrows a little bit. "But I'll have cocoa with Cooper." "Job at the Bulletin. Glad to hear it," Dad said, in between sipping his coffee. "Is Bill still doing sports?" She nodded. "Bill's running the sports desk now," she said. "Next time our paths cross, I'll tell him you said hello." Dad did that thing where he pushed his mouth up towards his nose when he wasn't sure about something, but then he finally spoke. "Why don't you and Coop drink your cocoa and then maybe take a walk with me over to Spaulding's to get a dozen donuts? It's still right around the corner, isn't it?"
"Still there," Grandpa said. "Been there forever. Best donuts in the whole damn city."
Dad loved donuts as much as anything else. It always made him happy to go and get them once he figured out where they were. "George, you want to join us?" Dad asked.
"I'd love to get some fresh air," Grandpa said.
But then he looked at Mom, so I looked at her too. She puffed out her cheeks and blew air out of her mouth, a thing she did when she didn't like something.
"Well," Grandpa said, "do have a bit of a cold still. Maybe I'll take a rain check."
"Suit yourself," Dad said. I wasn't sure what that even meant. I had a bathing suit, but I figured they weren't talking about that. So Dad, Aunt Pat, and I got ready to go. David was crying, so Mom took him upstairs, saying she had to change his diaper. Dad helped me put on my jacket, but I felt after he started that I didn't like that I didn't do it by myself because Aunt Pat was watching. I took my cap out of his hands and did my best to pull it over my own head. I had trouble with my mittens to get them on, but finally did. But I couldn't get my rubber boots on by myself, and Aunt Pat had to help me. Grandpa walked with us to the front door and opened it. After the three of us walked out, he waved and closed it. The sky was gray, but it wasn't too cold, except when the wind blew, which made my face and neck cold and even sting a little. Dad said we should probably walk in the street because the snow was plowed there, whatever that was. Maybe snow was plowed when it got gray and turned into slush. I liked the way the slush squeezed out under my boots. Aunt Pat walked on one side of me and Dad on the other. Dad reached out to take my hand, but I pulled it away. I slipped once and fell on my rear end. That's what Dad called it, though I thought you should call it your back middle. Aunt Pat asked me if I was okay, and I said I was. It did hurt some, for a few minutes, but I knew boys and grown-up men weren't supposed to say it hurt unless it hurt a lot. After I fell, Dad wanted to take my hand again, but I still didn't want him to. Dad seemed happy not to say anything and just listened to the snow making all its quiet gooshing and creaking noises as we walked through it. But Aunt Pat, I could tell, really wanted to talk. My sister didn't want to be alone with Mother, she said. I wondered why, but I wasn't going to ask, since she was sounding like a grown-up again, and figured they would think I was too young to know. Huh? Dad said, like he didn't know that. He pushed his lips together to think about that as he looked around. Liz is just going to have to get over it, he said. Then he chuckled and kicked the slush with one of his boots. We kept walking without talking anymore, and I wondered what Mom had to get over, whatever that meant. The donut store was like a house, but it had a really big window in front that you could look into and see all the donuts inside. We had to walk upstairs to go in the front door. I always got excited walking up and down stairs, even if it was only a few. When we opened the door, a bell rang and we walked in. Dad looked at all the orange boxes of donuts with the white stripes. Looking at each box carefully, he asked, "Your folks still like the powdered sugar ones?" "I like them," Aunt Pat said. "Let's get some." "But do they like them too?" "Daddy likes the plain ones," she said. "So do I," said Dad, and then pushed his lips together again. He turned to the man standing behind the shiny metal thing that stores kept money in. "Can we get a box with a half powdered sugar and half plain?" he asked. "Sorry," the man said, shaking his head and making a sad face. Dad nodded slowly with his lips still pushed together, but then I could tell he was thinking something new and he smiled just a little bit on one side of his mouth. "We'll just have to get 2 dozen, he said. "Hey, it's Christmas." Aunt Pat nodded. The man behind the metal thing nodded. I nodded. Dad sure liked donuts. The man gave him the 2 boxes and Dad gave him some paper and money stuff from his pocket. We went back outside and sat on the steps up to the store's front door. Dad looked down at the stairs and then at the two of us. "Shall we?" he asked, holding up the donut boxes. We both nodded. Dad brushed off whatever snow was left on the steps, so it was better for sitting. He sat on one side, and Aunt Pat and I sat on the other side, with her on a lower step, so there was space in the middle. He opened the orange and white striped box with the white donuts inside the clear part. He held the box out next to Aunt Pat, who looked in and then wrinkled her nose. "We're going to need some napkins," she said. "I'll go get them." And she kind of jumped up, more like a kid now, and went back in the store, the bell ringing again. She came back out, sat down again and wanted to give one to Dad, but he shook his head. He held the open box in front of her again, and she used the napkin to take one of the powdered white ones out. "Here, Coop," she said, using my shorter name that Mom and Dad used a lot, giving me the napkin with the donut in between. I figured out that I should put my fingers on the napkin part to take it from her. With another napkin, she took a second one out of the box. Dad closed that box and put it down, and then opened the other box with the brown donuts inside. He took one out with his fingers. We all were holding our donuts, looking at each other. Even Dad seemed like a kid right then. Dad held up his donut a little higher and then looked at us and smiled. "Cheers," he said. Aunt Pat said the same thing. Somehow I figured out that I should say that too. We all bit into our donuts. Powdered sugar got on my mouth, around my lips, and fell on my pants. Dad reached over and brushed it off my pants before I could do anything myself. Aunt Pat spread her knees apart so the powder on hers could fall onto the ground, and she right away had her fingers covering and wiping her mouth as she chewed and kind of chuckled at the same time. Dad's donut was easier to eat because nothing fell off of it. Maybe that's why he liked that kind so much. It felt good to chew on each bite of my donut and feel the sting of the sweetness in my mouth. It was soft and sweet and made me feel happy. I just wanted to take another bite even before I finished chewing the last one. When I had eaten all of mine, Dad and Aunt Pat were still eating theirs more slowly. While I watched them eat the rest of theirs, I really wanted another one, but decided I shouldn't ask. They finally finished, and we walked back to the house. We all seemed to have extra energy, and Aunt Pat was telling Dad about working for a newspaper, which I knew was one of those things with the big paper sheets, with the words and pictures on it, like a book but much bigger and with no cover, all folded together that sometimes you got at the store and sometimes all extra folded and put by your front door by some older kid with a big bag of them. I was happy just to walk in the snow and feel how different it could feel when I stepped on different parts of it. Some parts where it would mush down and kind of hold my foot in it, and other parts where it was hard and even slippery, each different part making a different kind of noise under my boots. When we got back, Mom and Grandpa were still sitting at the dining room table, and Grandma was in the kitchen doing stuff that made clinking noises, but still talking to Mom and Grandpa in the next room. I was used to always seeing David with her, but he wasn't now, and she said he had gone down for a nap upstairs, which really didn't make any sense. I knew that a nap was like sleeping when it wasn't nighttime, but going down upstairs was the part that I couldn't figure out. She looked sleepy but happy. "Oh, Eric," she said, rolling her big round eyes and smiling. "It's so nice to have some peace and adult company." She patted the top of Grandpa's hand, and I thought about that she called him Dad, and Aunt Pat called him Daddy because he was their dad, only from a long time ago. Which was all strange to me, but I guess even grown-ups could have moms and dads too. Dad took the two orange and white boxes of donuts from under his arm and put them on the table. 2 dozen? Said Mom, like she was sort of asking and sort of telling. "Yeah, Liz," Dad said. "They don't sell mixed dozens, and half of us like plain and half powdered, so I splurged." Mom did a little laugh and said, "What the hell? It's Christmas." "Okay, young man," came Grandma's voice from the kitchen. "Wait a few years before you use the H word." She laughed. Grandma came out of the kitchen, holding a big shiny white thing with a handle. "Coffee's up," she said. "Gotta have coffee if you're gonna have donuts. And I also warmed up the cocoa for Cooper." So we ate and drank,
and Mom, Grandpa, Grandma, and Aunt Pat were talking about everything, their voices getting louder and louder as they laughed and chuckled and even made noises with their noses. Every once in a while, they would stop and look at me, and one of them would ask me a question, and they'd all get quiet and expect me to do lots of talking. "So how did you like the train ride?" or "How do you like the name Cooper?" they asked me. It wasn't that I was afraid to talk, but that I did not like it when grown-ups asked me questions. It made me get too worried. If Molly or another kid asked me a question, that was okay, and I'd tell them my answer, because that's what you did, and they would usually listen. But grown-ups would sometimes ask you questions even when they knew which answer they wanted you to say. So when they ask about liking my Cooper name or the train, I just nodded. Grandpa asked, "How about that sleeping compartment on the train?" His eyes twinkled. I nodded again, but then remembered that word my mom had said. "It was cozy," I said. They all laughed like I had said something funny, except for Aunt Pat. "I like the big clock," I said, figuring then I could walk over to it and not be at the table anymore where they could ask me more questions. It worked. They went back to talking to each other. I looked way up at the round part of the clock that showed the time and remembered that Mom had taught me about figuring out the time and how the hands moved, but so slowly you couldn't see it. But this clock didn't have regular numbers like our clocks at home. This one just had lines and corners and crosses instead of numbers. But I counted, and there were 12 of them, just like on our clocks, so maybe they were just in some other different way of writing, since Grandpa and Grandma were really old. And those pine cone weight things, which Aunt Pat had me pull up to the top this morning, were down a little bit lower now. Maybe they moved too, but so slow that it didn't look like they were moving. While looking at the clock, my eyes started looking at the Christmas tree across from me in the living room with all the boxes under it that I knew were presents, that word I loved. So I went over there to look at them more closely. None of the grown-ups could see me anymore and continued to talk and laugh with each other. I felt really excited because now I could look closely at all those presents to figure out which ones were for me and try to guess what they were. I did look closely. I got down on my hands and knees and looked really close. I shivered with excitement and felt my heart pounding. I could tell a lot of words in writing, some with my Cooper name. Many of the boxes had little green and red tags on them with a square part, where you could write who it was from and who it was to. I mostly looked at the two names and found ones with Cooper next to the two word. There were 5 of them, some from Santa and some from Mom and Dad. The two from Mom and Dad were smaller, but hard and heavy, and did not make any noise when I picked them up and moved them around. One from Santa was long and had a circle on either end and made lots of clunking noises when I picked it up. I got super excited because I figured that was some kind of toy. The last two I figured were toys too because the boxes were bigger but not so heavy and they rattled just a little bit when I shook them. I liked all presents, but really liked presents that were toys. Toys gave me ideas to start pretending, to think up my own stories using them. I could put all my toys together to make even bigger stories. I could see myself ripping off the paper and finding out what they were. I was so excited, my body just had to do something. I stood up and ran up the stairs to the top part of the house. I was the only one up there, so I could look everywhere. I counted 5 rooms. That one small room had the bathtub, toilet, and sink, which was the bathroom. You could call it the sink room, but there were other rooms in the house that had sinks. You could call it the toilet room,
but people didn't like to talk about toilets. Some bathrooms were really small and didn't have bathtubs, but they still called them bathrooms. The other four rooms had beds, so you called them bedrooms, which made sense. Not like the living room, which made no sense. Each bedroom I walked into had a very different feeling in it. Grandpa and Grandma's was kind of scary, like everything in it had been there too long. The room Mom and Dad were sleeping in felt like someone was doing a lot of working in it, kind of like Dad's office in the basement. And Pat's bedroom seemed more fun. My little bedroom was again the cozy room. The windows in the upstairs bedrooms were like the ones in Molly's bedroom, down low and looking down on the yard and the street below. The whole house was more like Molly's house than our house. Our house didn't even have a top part and upstairs, except the attic, but you really couldn't go in there. When you were in the basement, I guess you could call the part of the house above it the upstairs, too. Though I liked the little room I was going to sleep in here, I still thought the basement of our house back home and Molly's room were the best of all the rooms in all the houses I'd been in. Our basement because, like someone said, it was unfinished. You could pretend it was many different things, and it had different rooms but no walls between them. Molly's bedroom, because of all the windows and how you felt like you were on top of everything, but in a cozy kind of way. Molly and I pretended that her house was like a giant ship, with all its stairways and railings and upstairs and downstairs parts. Sometimes we took turns being the captain, but usually we were both parts of the crew. But this room I was sleeping in was like a captain's room, at least as I pretended it would be in Treasure Island, up in the top back part of the ship, away from everything else, but with a window to look down at the ocean out there around the ship. So I pretended I was the captain, in charge of everyone else, but alone in my own special room, where I went to think by myself if everything was okay in the ship, or if there was trouble coming, maybe pirates even. I looked at the clock on the table by my bed. Time to check out the rest of the ship and make sure nothing was wrong. I walked out of my room and pretended I saw all the officers just sitting there looking at me in the officers' room. You better check on the men below. There could be pirates coming. See anything ahead? I asked. We don't think so, they said. But you better check too. I sat by the window in Aunt Pat's room and looked out. Off in the distance, I could see the big square building on the White Hill. Looks like we're getting close to the fort, I said. Good. I sat for a long while and kept looking. Then I saw a car driving by the big square building. Oh no, pirates, I said. They may have captured the fort. Better sound the alarm. I heard the sound of a bell clanging, though not with my ears. I walked out into the hall and looked in the bathroom. I lifted the toilet lid and looked in. Water supply, okay, good. Then I continued down the hall and walked into the room my mom and dad were sleeping in. I pretended it had all the important people we were trying to get to the fort so they would be safe from the pirates. It's okay, all of you, I said. We'll keep you safe as best we can. I sat and looked out the window. Up to the fort on the island hill. The car was gone. Don't see any pirates, but I know they're out there. Then I looked at all the people. Just don't do anything stupid, I said. They all nodded and said thank you. I went into Grandma and Grandpa's bedroom. I saw shiny metal things on a dresser. Treasure is safe, I said, at least for now.
Do we have enough supplies down below to fight them and shoot the cannons, Captain?
It sounded like it was Aunt Pat's voice, coming from the stairway, but I couldn't see her. I heard quick footsteps going down, and by the time I got to the stairway, she was gone. What was she up to? I quickly went down the stairs and looked in the living room. Nothing, except the Christmas tree and all those presents under it.
I walked by the big clock and looked in the dining room. Nothing there. Grandma, Grandpa, Mom, and Dad were all in the kitchen, but no one was talking. I looked in the doorway to the kitchen, and they all looked at me. Grandpa shook his head. "We haven't seen anything," he said. Something wasn't right. Now I ran back to the living room. Where did Aunt Pat go? I figured she must be in the basement. I walked carefully down the steps, but couldn't see her. There was no one in the half of the basement with the piano. It wasn't so much pretending now, but hide and seek. I carefully stepped into the laundry room, shivering again with excitement. I stopped and looked at the door to the garage. Did she go out that way? Suddenly, a figure rose from the other side of the washing machine. It startled me. It was Aunt Pat, with a big pillow mushed down on the top of her head so the three corners you could see stuck out like one of those Treasure Island captain hats. "Arg," she said. "Avast, ye lubber. I am the inimitable Captain Pillow, pirate extraordinaire. I'm sure you are aware of my exploits on the high seas." She pretended to pull a sword out of her belt and looked at me with a very fierce face. "Surrender your ship to me, or I will make you walk the plank," she said. Pretending the same story, I said, "Never," and ran up the stairs. She was still a kid. "You can't escape my wrath that easily, you scurvy dog," she said. "Fleeing to try to save your skin, ha!" And she clomped up the stairs after me. I ran into the living room and turned around. She appeared from the basement stairway. "Draw your sword, Captain Coop," she said. "I have tracked you down across the seven seas, and I will have my revenge." "You'll never get me, Captain Pillow," I said, and ran into the dining room and crawled under the big table behind the legs of the chairs. I could only see the bottom half of her body, feet taking careful steps as she circled the table. "Try to hide from me, eh? You are cunning, but it will not help you one morsel. I have waited far too long and finally have you exactly where I want you. Prepare to meet your fate, you scurvy dog," she said. Now over by the big clock, she kneeled down and looked at me under the table, holding her pillow hat on her head so it wouldn't fall off. "What have we here?" she said slowly. On all fours, I scrambled out from under the dining room table into the kitchen. Mom, Dad, Grandma, and Grandpa looked down at me. Mom said, "We'd like to help you, but Captain Pillow would make us walk the plank." Aunt Pat continued to chase me around the house like that until she finally cornered me in my captain's cabin upstairs. I closed the door behind me and sat against it, breathing hard to catch my breath. I heard her voice on the other side. "I can wait. I have nothing but time. I have sailed the seven seas for a lifetime to track you down. So one or two more hours, one or two more days even, means nothing to me. You can stay in there until you rot, or you can come out and face me. Arg!" I waited for what seemed like a long time, liking the excitement and energy I was feeling in my body. Finally, I stood up and opened the door and walked out. "I'm your prisoner. Don't kill me," I said. "You deserve to die," she said. "But instead of finding that damn plank, where did I put that thing? I will..." She dragged me down to the bed, her fingers digging into my sides. "Tickle you to death." I laughed and squirmed and loved this end to our story. That concludes the 17th chapter of Clubius Incarnate. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for the next chapter, where it's finally Christmas morning and I get to open my presents.